Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to voice actor Rob Paulsen, whose vocal acrobatics have brought life to some of the world's favorite cartoons, including Pinky and the Brain, Animaniacs, Jimmy Neutron, Boy Genius, and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. He's also the host of his own podcast, Talkin' Tunes. Stick around. You will believe a grown man can be a crime-fighting Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle in just moments. Who didn't love Pinky and the Brain and the Animaniacs? Delicious animated antics for the kids, wordplay, pop references, and in-jokes for the adults. All that and big servings of today's guests, voice actor Rob Paulsen. Paulsen, like Billy West, is a modern-day Mel Blanc, the man of 1,000 voices who gave us Bugs Bunny, Elmer Fudd, Jack Benny's Sputtering Maxwell, and so many more. A partial list of Paulsen's characters includes, yes, Haji from Johnny Quest. See, that I think that was Haji in the background. He's throwing his voice now. A new talent. Raphael on the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle series. Donatello on the latest version. Yakko Warner, Pinky, Dr. Scratch and Sniff in Animaniacs. And, of course, who could forget Officer Douche on the Boondocks. Everyone forgot, but I found that in IMDb.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say douche. He was also the voice of the Mask in the animated series based on the character created for the movie starring Jim Carrey. Boy, that was a long sentence. Yeah. Smokin'!
Yeah.
Maybe you should say it.
You want What's
to,
that?
Can you say smokin'? Because I obviously
sure. blew it. Smokin'!
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I will not ask you to do much of that.
No problem.
For a complete list of Rob's thousands of credits, including roles on Dexter's Laboratory, Powerpuff Girls, and a multitude of DC and Marvel superhero cartoons, consult IMDb, but have a lot of time on your hands when you do it. In addition to drawing new roles, Paulsen can also be seen performing music from the Animaniacs live, in concert, with full orchestras around the country, and he hosts a podcast called Talkin' Tunes. Talkin' Tunes, to which I have personally subscribed for months, not knowing we were going to have this conversation, actually, is
cool.
Is a show that attracts well-known voice actors such as Brad Garrett from Everybody Loves Raymond and Seth Green from, well, everything, Robot Chicken, you name it, to performers such as Paulsen, whose name, such as Rob Paulsen, whose names you may not instantly know, but whose familiar work will bring an instant smile to your face. Incidentally, and we're near the end of the introduction, folks. Incidentally, if you love the cartoons as I do, check the Mr. Media archives for my interviews with Josh Keaton, the voice of Spider-Man and Disney's Hercules, Carolyn Lawrence, who is Sandy Cheeks on SpongeBob SquarePants, and Kat Tabor, the voice of Padme Amidala of Star Wars: The Clone Wars. And after that long and windy breath, Rob Paulsen, welcome to Mr. Media.
Bob, my goodness. Thank you very much. I don't feel worthy of such high praise, my friend. Thank you. And by the way, I have to tell your audience, not only do you know what you're talking about in terms of your acumen with respect to all things animated and pop culture, this gentleman is the single most flexible, kind, decent man whom I've had the pleasure of speaking with in probably just about ever. And trust me, I have been around a long time. Many people don't know this, but I was the entertainment at the Last Supper. In those days, I was Shecky of Arimathea. But I'm telling you what, I dropped the ball this morning. I thought the interview was a different time. Bob was very gracious. We tried to set it up again. I'm having my roof replaced. We had to take a pass. I had somebody come out to work on. Let's just suffice to say that you are the most decent person, and thank you so much for being so flexible and so kind to me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, and good night. Tip your waitresses. I'm out of here.
Good night, everybody.
Yeah.
That was very kind. Completely
there you go. Perfect timing.
Completely unnecessary, but very kind. Thank you.
Not at all.
Happy to have you here, and we try to be accommodating.
You have been, my friend. Thank you.
So now here's the thing, and you just proved the point of the first thing I wanted to ask you, which is I always find having voice actors on the show more intimidating than screen actors because I never know who I'm talking to.
Well, that's true, and I'm not medicated, so you never know. You know, you never know when somebody might just say "Narf" for whatever reason. But it's interesting you say that because I've been doing this a while, as you were kind enough to mention, and I often work with bona fide, you know, celebrity movie star talent. And I find that when I'm in a room with my friends who are by extension your friends and thereby your audience, Frank Welker and D. Bradley Baker and Maurice LaMarche and Tress MacNeille and, you know, Danny Castellaneta, all these incredibly gifted primarily voice talents, when you're in a room with them and then a celebrity walks in and these people are turned loose, oh my God, you can see the blood drain out of the faces of the celebrity talent. Not because they're not good at their gig, but it's not their wheelhouse. And so Tress MacNeille will go off, or Billy West will go off, or John DiMaggio will go off, and you can see them going, you know, I don't do that. And of course, they're not hired for that. But it is a pretty remarkable group of actors, Bob. I work every day with people, not only with whom I choose to spend my free time because we're all really close friends, but I'm telling you what, having done live action, stage, music, voice acting, these people are really gifted and absolutely devoid of pretense. They're really nice, but frighteningly gifted.
You know, one of the best-known actors, screen actors types, who did voices, probably is Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Of course, did voices in his sleep, I suspect.
Oh, totally.
Is it a prize? I mean, you would think that he may have had some schizophrenia issues. Is that kind of an occupational hazard for some people?
Well, you know, that's a great question. I think, God rest his soul, I think that it would be safe to say that Robin had personal issues over and above his. I mean, clearly, you know, when you take your own life, there are other things going on, as heartbreaking as all that is. However, I did not know Robin. I did know Jonathan Winters, and he was one of my heroes, and I got to work with Jonathan a lot. And Jonathan, of course, was a hero of Robin's as well. I never in my life heard anybody say anything but fabulous things about Robin, and I was a huge fan. But I think it's safe to say that those folks have issues or had issues. I don't know that it's necessarily part of somebody being successful. I certainly am a little skewed, but I don't plan on hurting myself. Certainly I'm not a danger to others, and I don't require any medication. But when you're somebody who is that unique and walks that edge all the time, I don't think it's unusual that they are a little bit tweaked. Certainly Jonathan Winters and was even very forthcoming about his stories of being, you know, folks would call his wife and say, you know, your husband is talking to the frozen food at 2 o'clock in the morning at the Ralph's in Toluca Lake. I think that's part of their genius. That is not unusual though. As you know, being a professional in this business, many, many, particularly stand-ups, a lot of actors have issues with substance abuse, emotional things. I think because they are so sensitive and so available to the dark and light sides of their personality, we are the sort of grateful beneficiaries in the audience of their genius. But it's got to be a little bit tortured. And I think Robin is a great example of that. I certainly, you know, we'd heard about Robin's, you know, substance abuse, personal issues, but that happens in Hollywood all the time. People go in and out of rehab, no big deal. But when he took his own life, that was something that I thought, wow, I certainly, as a big fan, had no idea the extent to which he was struggling in that regard. Interestingly enough, his daughter, Zelda, who's just beautiful and very talented and delightful, is on Ninja Turtles. She's a recurring role on the new version of Ninja Turtles. She plays a character called Mona Lisa, who has a crush on Raphael, who is played by Sean Astin. And she was absolutely delightful. And what's freaky is I remember when she was born, because I'm a fan of Robin's, and welcome, ooh, I want you to welcome my daughter Zelda. Oh, you know, that kind of stuff. But she's really sweet. And I certainly didn't ask her any questions about Robin, but But I don't think it's unusual for people to be on the edge like that. And we just only hope that they're able to entertain us and satisfy their souls in terms of their performance without doing themselves damage. And unfortunately, in Robin's case, it wasn't to be. But boy, what a legacy he left.
So Ninja Turtles, I didn't realize. I mean, I knew Sean Green was Sean Green.
Sean Astin?
No, well, isn't Sean Seth. Seth Green.
Yeah. Seth is Leo, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't realize that Sean was on it, and I certainly didn't know Zelda was on it. It's
I got to tell you, man, that is a – well, you guys, you know this because of your gig, but that is a very unique circumstance when you have, I would say, inarguably one of the top, what, three or four franchises in the history of animation to be really successful over literally a generation. I have been fortunate enough to get two rides in the Turtle Van. I was Raphael, as you mentioned, on the original show, and now I'm Donatello 25 years later, and it is arguably as big or bigger than it's ever been since Viacom bought it and put it on Nickelodeon. But yeah, Leo is Seth Green. Raph is now Sean. I'm Donatello. Greg Sipes, who many of your folks might know as Beast Boy from Teen Titans and many other shows, is Michelangelo. Master Splinter is a wonderful Korean American actor named Hoon Lee, who is a regular on Banshee. I think that's on, I forget which.
Is that Stars or
Stars? Yeah, right? And he plays like kind of this odd transgendered Asian bizarre character. Phenomenal actor. He plays Master Splinter. The beautiful and talented Kevin Michael Richardson is Shredder. And I mean, what a great cast! The recurring people are Phil LaMarr, Clancy Brown.
Brown, there's a name I haven't heard in a while.
What a talent! Mae Whitman, the beautiful Mae Whitman, plays April O'Neil. And this season four, which is beginning on Nickelodeon in October, this is pretty exciting because we have a lot of celebrity talent who, as you know, love doing animated shows. So we've got a 13-story arc out of the 26 with David Tennant, who many of your fans know as what I think the 10th Doctor Who.
Right.
And I'm not a big Whovian, but I really love him in Broadchurch, or as he says, Broadchurch, with that Scottish accent. And he is a turtle fanatic. So folks have a lot to look forward to. Some really incredible actors. Not only David Tennant, but Lucy Lawless comes in for a couple of episodes with Xena, Warrior Princess, and Ron Perlman, my buddy Ron. We've been friends a long time, long before Sons of Anarchy. But boy, that and Hellboy really push his stock high. Terrific actor. So there is, to be sure, a cachet for people who want to be involved in Ninja Turtles. And you're looking at 50% of the Ninja Turtles and one middle-aged white guy. I'm a lucky man.
Pretty amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing, yeah.
So I got to ask you, do you ever have mornings where you get up and your wife is already awake and she's staring at you and she tells you that you've been talking in your sleep as Donatello?
You know, not so far. I don't know that I would still have been married if that were the case. She has obviously had to put up with quite a bit. As I said earlier, I'm a little bit tweaked. I don't require medication. Day's not over yet. No, she's a really good sport. I don't, so far that I know of, talk in my sleep. But I'll tell you what happens a lot is friends of both mine and my wife's throughout the years have said, would you mind making my voice male as Pinky? And so, you know, that's, I can say, you know, you've reached Bob's answering machine. He's not here at the moment. If you'd like to leave a message, he will call you back straight away, unless, of course, he owes you money, in which case you will never hear from him again. Bye-bye.
Nerf.
So we get that a lot, and it's delightfully fun. And especially now, what's really, really sweet is seeing, as I alluded to earlier, when I go do personal appearances, Comic-Cons, which are springing up all over the country, the geeks are inheriting the earth, and thank goodness. But what's so delightful, Bob, is seeing mom and dad come in at 35, dressed as Raphael and Donatello, and then the kids are dressed as Leo and Mikey. And they both are crazy about Ninja Turtles, whether it was the original iteration or the new one or everything in between. But it's so great because they just share this deep love of this crazy franchise. And I sit there and I am just constantly amazed, incredibly humbled. And as I said, it's just about as popular, if not more so, than it's ever been. And it's a huge thrill for me.
Before we get too far away from it, you mentioned Jonathan Winters when we started, and I got to ask, I did not realize that you'd work with him. Tell me about working with him, and what kind of things did you do together?
We were working on Smurfs together. Maybe, I don't know if people remember, but he was Grandpa Smurf. Papa Smurf was none other than the beautiful late, oh my God, I lost my train of thought. I'll remember it. Don Messick, who was not only the voice of Papa Smurf, but he was the voice of Dr. Quest on the original Johnny Quest. He was the voice of the Ranger and Boo Boo and Baba Louie on all those great Hanna-Barbera cartoons. So we were all doing the first few shows I did at Hanna-Barbera were at sort of the end of Smurfs. And I did maybe 10 or 15 episodes. And Gordon Hunt, God bless Gordon Hunt, the man who gave me my start really in animation, who is not only well known for his incredible direction on all that Hanna-Barbera stuff, but is also well known because he's a world-class acting teacher out here and is Helen Hunt's father. And
he gave her start too.
He did. Absolutely right, Bob. And I worked with Helen many times when he was, I gave her the literal start, as you say. But I worked with Helen many times when she was a teenager in a bunch of cartoons as she was just getting started. And Gordon knew that I was a big, improv comedy junkie, and you know that Jonathan was one of my heroes, and God bless him. The first day that I happened to be in the session in which Jonathan was appearing, he said, "Hey, Jonathan's coming in today. Do you want to sit next to him?" And I said, "Oh my God, are you kidding me? That's like sitting at the feet of the master." And as was Jonathan's wont, typical, like every time you guys have seen him on the Tonight Show or in videos or whatever, he did precisely what he did with me that he would do with Johnny Carson, which is just go. And I sat next to him and I said, "Mr. Winters, pleasure to meet you. Nice to meet you, young fella. How you doing? Great. Congratulations. You're working. Yes, sir. Big fan, blah, blah, blah." So we get ready to go. And Gordon says, "Okay, action." And everybody just looked at Jonathan because it was sort of a known fact. You're working with Jonathan Winters. You build extra time into the session because he is Jonathan, and you not only don't want to step on his creativity, but the selfish part of you says, "I just want to see him go off. It's a free show with Jonathan freaking Winters." So Gordon said, "Action," and everybody looked at Jonathan. He looked at me sitting next to him. And he says, he picks up like he's looking down the barrel of a rifle next to me. He elbows me and says, "Shoot the priest." I said, "What?" He said, "For God's sakes, aren't you paying attention, Davey? Shoot the priest." Well, all of a sudden, he called me Davey, and I was relatively facile. So he wanted to play, and we're at the Alamo. I'm all of a sudden Davey Crockett. We're at the Alamo, and he's going, "Shoot the priest." And I said, "Okay, why should I shoot the priest, sir?" He said, "Because that'll stop those Mexicans right in their tracks, because that's how he stopped the Mexicans at the Alamo. It was not about being politically incorrect or anything. It was just boom, right out of nowhere. So I thought, here I am at 25. I thought, wow, I'm pretty sharp. I'm jumping in with Jonathan Winters, and he sees that I get it. So I said to him, "Absolutely, Colonel Travis, I will do my best to shoot the priest." And he looks at me and goes, "Colonel Travis, I'm Jim Bowie. Travis is upstairs loading cannons. What the hell's the matter with you? Shoot the priest." So as sharp as I thought I was, he was already two steps ahead of me. I thought I was going to be pretty sharp by throwing out Colonel Travis. And he said, "Nah, I'm not Colonel Travis. I'm Jim Bowie." So that was my introduction. And then when we got done, I just said, "Mr. Winters, thank you again. What a pleasure to meet you, sir." And we just started walking out to our cars together, and he did 20 minutes for me in the parking lot. He did Chester Honeyhugger and Maude Frickert and, all of these great characters that I'm 59. So I used to watch him doing all this on The Tonight Show. And my father and mother and I, and my siblings were younger, but my God, he's Jonathan Winters. And he did 20 minutes from me in the parking lot. And that's when you understand that people like that, who are so gifted and driven and passionate, and it's part of their DNA, they can't not do it. You know, they can't not be on. And I think that's probably difficult for maybe some of their loved ones, but as, but for the audience, it's heaven. So that was one of those moments where I called my parents and said, you are not going to believe not only who I worked with, but who did 20 minutes for me in the parking lot. So I will never forget that as long as I live. Man, it was incredible.
Does anyone start out in Hollywood wanting to be a voice actor, or do they wind up, you know, someone says, hey, your voice would be perfect for this? Mm-hmm. Or has it gotten to the point, like so many crafts in L.A., where there's a whole bunch of people who are just coming out just for that?
That's a really great question. And the answer is, I would have said a few years ago, no, most people do not start out wanting to just be a voice actor. I can think of, in my career, and I've been in L.A. since 1978 and working a lot in voice acting, almost not exclusively, but heavily, since 1985, so 30 plus years. And the only two world-class voice talents whom I know who really said, we want to be voice actors, are Nancy Cartwright, who your audience will know as Bart Simpson, and Corey Burton, who all they need to do is look him up and they'll freak out. But Corey and Nancy are the only two people who are my contemporaries whom I know that wanted to be voice actors. Everybody else, myself, Maurice LaMarche, Frank Welker, all of us, Peter Cullen, we all started doing either live action, stage, stand-up, music, came to L.A. Ostensibly to do live action, did that. And then we had the opportunity to read for things and realize that, wow, this is cool, man. There are a million average-looking white guys with SAG cards in L.A., so how cool is it to not be limited by the way I look? However, now things have changed a lot because Animaniacs, boy, how Dr. Freud, Yakko is here, Dr. Freud. Now animation is so ubiquitous and so big, and there are so many 24-hour animated channels and features and all this stuff, video games, that there are many, many people who are coming to L.A. just to do voice work. And I understand why, because it's become a huge part of the entertainment industry, and a lot of celebrity talent is doing it. You find that you can still have an on-camera career, like Sean and Seth on Turtles are off and off doing live-action things, and doesn't stop them from still doing it. So, yeah, I think now there are many young folks coming out to L.A., with just the idea of doing voice work.
Has part of the change been that it used to be the 60s, 70s, even the 80s, disc jockeys were pretty good at that because, hey, folks, you know, get on down to the automat, you know. And
right.
There's just not – people aren't going into radio anymore because everything is formatted. There's no freedom. Yeah. You're not the crazy zoo in the morning, as my friend Clayton
right.
Wheeler. Is that opened up the opportunity for people to pursue voice work in a different way?
Well, I think so. I know that, God rest his soul, Gary Owens was a dear friend. And boy, oh boy, did you ever get a chance to talk to Gary?
I didn't, but he was on my mind when I asked the question, actually.
What a talent and delightful, sweet, new, oh my God, so many Hollywood stories. Gary was one of those guys that was a big, 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 big radio guy. Casey Kasem, another one who was the voice of Shaggy on Scooby-Doo forever. But remember, Gary used his, you know, beautiful downtown Burbank, laughing voice. Yeah, voice. He used that for most of his cartoon work, Powdered Toast Man and, you know, Super Chicken and Space Ghost and all that, because they liked that stentorian delivery that he did. Casey, interestingly enough, you know, was doing this kind of a weird Pat Buttram, you know, G-Scoob kind of guy. So it wasn't the weekly top 40 guy. I have to say that most people who come from radio that had those big, like Morning Zoo voice guys that you're talking about, Grease Man and all those guys, they they didn't necessarily last, as far as I knew, in the voice acting biz, because it's about acting as opposed to beating, you know, somebody over the head with your voice, where your gig was, hey, I'm a blind, I'm dying, you know, it's the top 40, you know, the big hit, you know, Tommy James, the Shondells coming out of you live, and that kind of puker kind of voice. And that was their gig in the 50s and 60s and 70s. But as animation progressed, it was more about acting and creating characters. And so you would have people like Gary or Lorenzo Music, who had a very specific type of voice. And that is the characters that that is the voice that would end up being the sort of root of the characters that they were creating and would go on to become famous. But most of us, our stock and trade, with few exceptions, is being versatile, doing dialects, being able to sing, you know, thinking on your feet, a lot of improv, that kind of stuff, which is, I think, why Red Skelton, Carol Burnett, the Pythons, the Goons, Jonathan Winters were all my heroes, because they would not only change their demeanor, but their voices would change, and often the characters would become completely different. And so that's been my stock and trade, because I can't make a living with my plain old vanilla voice. It comes in handy for sort of young superhero-y stuff or weird dad stuff. But,
you know, I could do Yakko all day long, but that's how I, you know, that's how I pay the rent on the water tower, you know.
Or as you posted on Facebook, thanks for the house, Stephen.
Oh, yes. Well, we were yesterday, I think, apparently was the, or this week was the official 20th anniversary of the release of Pinky and the Brain as its own separate show. And so my buddy Maurice LaMarche, my friend the Brain, put something on his Facebook page, but I think I sort of echoed it by saying, you know, thanks to Peter Hastings and Tom Ruger with a dash of Mr. Spielberg for my house, or thanks for the house. Because, boy, I'll tell you what, man, when you get a chance to work with those people, and they're still, you know, dear friends, Tom Ruger, Peter Hastings, Gene McCurdy used to be the head of Warner Brothers Animation, all those wonderful writers, and Maurice, Tress McNeil, Jess Harnell, delightful people. But it is not hyperbole. Those producers, Steven, Mr. Spielberg, I shouldn't say Steven, Mr. Spielberg, Tom Ruger, Gene McCurdy, Peter Hastings, those people gave me a lot of work and entrusted me with some very precious characters. And they did. They, for all practical purposes, bought my house, and I'm eternally grateful to them.
Are they paying for the new roof?
No, not as such. Well, to the extent that there may be residuals on those. So, yeah, if I get a residual check from Pinky and the Brain, then to that extent, yeah, they are.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fair.
Yeah.
And you mentioned people who are your heroes in the business. I wanted to ask you, had those people changed over the years as your career went from coming out and maybe planning to do more in front of the camera and now doing more voice work? Did your heroes change over time because of that?
Boy, that's your question. No wonder you've got a successful show. Your questions are excellent. Billy West said something that I really agree with. My heroes have always been artists or even athletes, but people who continue to perform their skill at a high level for a long period of time. For instance, you know, Donald Fagen or Eric Clapton or David Gilmour. Jeff Beck. These people are in their close to 70, if not over, and they still perform at such a high level. It could be the same thing with Robert Rauschenberg or Jackson Pollock, or artists who perform or who do their art well into their, you know, I forgot the gentleman who wrote Naked Lunch. Anyway, I'll think of it, but Charlie Bukowski, you know, people who write and often don't even find their voice until they're 50. Paul Newman was a great example, not only a wonderful actor, but I read an interview with Paul, Mr. Newman, I should say. I certainly didn't know him, but I'm a fan. Paul Newman said something really profound in the last interview before he passed away. They were talking about Road to Perdition, which looked like every frame looked like a painting, and he was nominated for an Oscar in his late or mid 70s. I think he passed away at 81, but he said in this interview, and I'm paraphrasing a bit, but the gist of what he was saying was, you know, as an actor, and this is Paul freaking Newman, said, I don't really think I started to get it till I was 70. And what that does to me is shows me that these people are driven by passion for their art. And those are people who are my heroes. Certainly Mel Blanc was a hero, as was Jay Ward, Bill Scott, Paul Frees, June Foray. I've gotten to know June very well. She's 97. Everybody else has passed away. Don Messick, delightful. And all these people were my heroes in terms of, you know, Edward Everett Horton, Hans Conried, in terms of their voice work. But they're, you know, and they were working till they were quite old. I had the pleasure of working with Mel Blanc twice before he passed away. And I think he was probably in his mid 80s because he died at 89, I think in about 1989. And it was so delightful because here he was still working, having a great time. And I remember sitting next to him again at Hanna-Barbera. And I said, you know, Mr. Blanc, what a pleasure to meet you. And I hope I'm not overstepping my bounds, but if it's not a big deal, would you? And before I could ask, he looks at me and said, yeah, what's up, Doc? And now, of course, you just lose control. All those people continue to be my heroes because when I mentioned like the folks I'm talking about, the same with actors and actresses. Helen Mirren, I think, has never been more beautiful and talented and interesting at age 70 than she was at age 40. And I love that. David Gilmour just released a new record. He hasn't done a Pink Floyd album in 20 years, but it doesn't matter. He doesn't need the money. He loves to create. And so those people, those people are my heroes, people who continue to sort of inspire and impress and do their gigs for the sake of doing the gig, you know, as they get older. I'm working on a project right now for the last few years with David Copperfield in Las Vegas. He is not only a delightful guy, but he's David freaking Copperfield. You know, he's been the finest illusionist of our time for 30 years ish. Okay. We're the same age. Now, it's no secret that David's probably worth $800 million. But it's not about the money. It's about what is the next thing I'm going to – he hides it beautifully. Well said. Again, you should do stand-up. There should be a rim shot that you should press every time you come up with another great joke. It was first Helen Hunt and now David Copperfield. But he's a great example. He hasn't needed a dime for a generation. But to him, it's about what is the next really bitchin' illusion that's going to blow people's minds. So I would like to think that I have that drive. I have to tell you, I am as impassioned by my work now at 59 as I was at 19. And I don't really see it going anywhere because I just love to work. I love to be inspired by new folks who are showing up. And I'm constantly inspired by the people with whom I work who are my contemporaries on a daily. Tom Kenny, you know, SpongeBob, Jesus Christ. He opens his mouth and it's just outrageous.
Well, I thought you were going to say in a cash register rings in heaven.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Listen, I've been rich and I've been poor, and rich is better. There's no question about it. I figured that out. But I got to tell you, in my case, the best way for me to make money is to be impassioned about my work and focus on that. And then, you know, people pay me. I'm not very good at – if I worry about money, that doesn't work for me. I'm love to create.
I take a pretty similar attitude. I try not to take on – you know, any kind of work that I'm going to find disagreeable. I don't work with people I don't like, you know.
Thing. Well, and you were mentioning you have a son, and what a lovely thing to be able to be an inspiration to your child by your example. My son is 31 and is working in like the anime business and the cartoon business and just interviewed at DreamWorks this week and doing great on his own. But we've had this chat on more than one occasion, and I remember my father around 50, 55, and for the last 10 or 15 years of his working life, who, you know, grew up during the Depression, you get that job and you hold on to it, and I understand that. But if you have the luxury of seeing a parent who loves their work, who is impassioned by their work, and who at 55 or 60 says, man, I can't wait to go to work. And I don't care if it's working at a gas station or arranging flowers or being an actor or hosting a show or being a professional bowler. It is so wonderful to be able to have the luxury of saying, I wouldn't do anything else. If I weren't making any money as an actor, I'd be doing something to pay my bills and doing community theater. You know what I mean? So if people are lucky enough to have an example of a parent who loves their work, that's a big deal. It really is.
How do you keep track of, do you keep track of all your voices? I mean, does it matter if Mr. Weezer and Jimmy Neutron, Attack of the Twonkies, sounds a lot like Denzel Duggle Monster and Henry Huggle Monster?
Right.
And no, well, folks, I'm not making these names up. These are real.
I know. And the thing that's even crazier is that, you know, people from time to time, I'll meet them at some event and they'll say, you know, I'm 45 years old. I got to tell you, I love Jimmy Neutron. I said, well, hey, man, I'm 15 years older than you and I do them for a living. So it's okay. People seem to forget that it's a bunch of, you know, chronologically anyway, adults who make these shows. Yeah, Carl Weezer. I really like Carl. He's kind of an odd critter, but he's a good friend of mine. Yeah, I don't really have a mental Rolodex as such. I've think been fortunate to do 4 or 5 characters. I don't know that I'd be so bold as to call them iconic yet. You know, maybe when I'm dead and buried, somebody will decide they are. I don't think I'm in the Mel Blanc category, but certainly Yakko, Pinky, the two turtles, and Carl Weezer, and maybe Arthur from The Tick are pretty well known characters that people really. And I got to tell you, it happens all the time. I'm a very anonymous fellow for obvious reasons, but when people find out what I do, they love it. And all I have to do is say "Narf," and people do what you're doing right now, and it's the most delightful thing in the world. So I don't really have them sort of cataloged. And there's no question that people probably hear things and say, wow, this character that Rob did 10 years after he did this other show with a similar character sound kind of the same. Well, that's probably true. And if you listen to Daffy and Sylvester, they're a little bit different, but you know, they both have when the little fat turn up here and when the you're despicable, you know, they're just a little bit different. But I think that's where the acting part of it comes in. And the what is a lovely compliment that I get nowadays is that people who are sort of 30-ish and when they heard about the new iteration of Turtles coming out, you know, they get very protective of things that affect them in a deeply nostalgic way. And so they're, oh man, I hope they don't screw up Ninja Turtles. You know, nobody starts out to spend a pile of money and screw it up. Promise you, kids.
Right.
But what the lovely thing is, they'll say, oh my God, I saw it and it's great. I love the new Ninja Turtles. Well, the reason is because it's being made by kids who are 35 years old. They grew up watching Turtles, and you can argue pretty strongly that they get the mythology better than anybody except Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, right? But what is a really lovely compliment to me is people will say, oh my God, then I thought, I recognize that voice. I did. That's the same guy that was Raphael when I was a little kid. Now he's doing Donatello. Well, that's kind of weird. But then they say, you know, I hear the voice and the character is completely different. And that is kind of the ultimate compliment to me because that means I'm doing my job as an actor. And as an example, I'm not trying to compare myself stature-wise, but the reason we love Jack Nicholson is because Jack does Jack. You know, he can say, you know, he can do the same. He can say Mrs. Mulray the same way he says, here's Johnny. And it's Jack. It's his Jackisms. But Jack's a terrific actor. And he becomes, you know, Jake Giddies or was it the Riddler or the Joker? The Joker. Yeah. So, but we like Jack because he's got it. And I'm just saying I'm an actor, and hopefully at this stage I'm a good actor. So the idea is not so much that my voice doesn't change, is that the character and the sensibilities of the characters, which is a testament to the writing and the way that the show is executed. But if I'm doing my job right, then people should be able to buy Rob Paulsen My voice is a little higher and a little nerdier as Donatello, but it's about the performance and the script and the way it's executed, not the fact that they go, oh my God, it's the same voice. If that's the case and they're put off by the same voice and they don't buy the character, then I'm not doing my job. So they're all kind of banging around in there. And certainly there are four or five that come right to the fore because they've been such a huge part of my life. And I could talk to you all damn day as Pinky, and you probably want to shoot me.
No, I don't think so. And actually, when you did Nicholson a minute ago, I was thinking you did Nicholson, and before you did Robin Williams, you did a little Jonathan Winters. And that was part of the thing that was so great about Animaniacs, was that there's that crazy, you know, heliumated voice of the,
right.
Right. And then yeah. They could break into doing, you know, Nicholson or right.
Totally. And the actors whom we had there. Oh, my God. Tress MacNeille. I'll tell you what, your viewers, just Google Tress MacNeille, T-R-E-S-S, M-A-C, capital N-E-I-L-L-E. Now, she is, and with all due respect to June Foray, June was and will always be, you know, right up there. She was Rocky and Natasha and so many other things. But Tress now has, I believe, become the preeminent voice actress in the history of Hollywood. I think it's inarguable, Bob. And if you Google her, she's done 500 episodes of The Simpsons alone, let alone Babs Bunny and Dot Warner and Gadget on Rescue Range. I mean, Future Mom on Futurama, you name it. And she's one of my dearest friends. She's like my big sister, and she might slap me, but she's 63 years old, and she's not run dry, continues to blow my mind and those of the audience. So when you look at that, she was part of Animaniacs, Maurice LaMarche, God bless him, who won back-to-back Emmys for his work on Futurama, let alone Pinky and the Brain, Jess Harnell, Frank Welker, Bernadette Peters, John Mariano, just supremely talented actors, Billy West, Jeff Bennett. And these guys are not only world-class actors, but, I mean, you know, forget it, singers, Bernadette Peters. It doesn't get any better than Bernadette. But they're also really wonderful. Again, we were talking about stand-up comics, improv people, so they're very facile. And they come up with spot-on impressions, or impressions. In Maurice's case, he was an impressionist and still is. So he's got all these piles of impressions in the back of his head and then uses them in the context of the show and changes them a little bit. And oh, my God, it really is an embarrassment of riches. And that's right. I think that's one of the reasons Animaniacs and Pinky and the Brain and shows like that continue to be effective and entertaining, is because they didn't, in the beginning, condescend to the audience, but good stuff is good stuff. Bugs Bunny's 75 years old. I could watch Duck Season, Wabbit Season, fire, and still make me laugh from my soul.
Of course.
It's 45 years old, 50 years old. You know, it's good stuff.
What characters, if any, have been the hardest to develop and make unique? Because, for example, you know, if you know you're going to do Yakko for, like when you started, you know you're going to get 13 episodes at least.
Right.
Don't know how much further it's going to go. So you have to be able to develop, I guess, a voice that you can do repeatedly and go back to instantly, right? And
yeah,
I mean, was that a hard voice to come by, or was there something else that was difficult but had a good payoff because you were able to keep doing it over time?
Well, there are certainly voices that are more onerous and more difficult to keep up. I do a sort of side character that's a blast I've been doing for the last 10 years on Fairly Odd Parents for Nickelodeon. And it's this alien that sort of talks like a surfer dude. His name is Mark Chang. And he's like this weird octopus dude with a clear plastic head. And Butch Hartman, who produces and created that show, loves it when Mark is just over the top, dude. And that, after about a half an hour, will tear you up. There are
Yakko's no big deal. I have this, fortunately, this ability to squeeze my voice, and I can do that, you know, and all day long. Hello, nurse, all day long.
But there are voices. That one, also The Mask. As you mentioned earlier, I was the animated version of Jim Carrey for a whole lot less money, and we did I think two or three seasons of The Mask. That one was a little bit tricky because, as you recall, whenever Stanley Ipkiss put on the mask, he became whatever the script dictated, pirate or a cowboy or a chef or who knows.
A cheap whore.
A what?
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
I think I said a cheap whore, but
oh, a cheap whore.
How dare I? Yeah.
Well, that's how I get most of my work, and I'm very proud of that.
God bless
so, yeah,
everyone.
Cheap whore. So that one was a little trickier because in the movie, of course, you do the mask and you do a couple of hours of Stanley Ipkiss and then the mask and then you're done. With an animated show, every episode requires, you know, a different goofy three or four characters that come as a result of putting on the mask. So that was a little bit trickier, but great, an incredibly great challenge. I did this really kind of fun show that only had, I think, one or two seasons, but was very cool, called Mighty Max. And I got to play Max, and the other cast members were Tim Curry, Tony Jay, the late great Tony Jay, and Richard Mall from Night Court, Big Bull.
Right.
And very interesting show. That one was not difficult. It was, I think I had more of an issue with staying on the script because I was so transfixed by Tim Curry. He is a star. And so good, so talented. He's one of those guys where you find yourself watching what he's doing and they say, Rob, it's your line. Oh, yeah, it's just watching Tim, you know, light up the room. So, yeah, there are some that are more, you know, vocally strenuous. But once you're locked into a voice, you know, go right to it. And to the extent they need to get you back on model, then they'll just play your reference and off you go.
If an animated character was created based on Rob Paulsen, what would he look like? What would he sound like?
Oh, golly. He would probably look a lot like Raphael. He's kind of a smartass. I would say things like, gosh, Bob, I hope I'm not condescending. Oh, I'm sorry. That means talk down to. You know, or you know, I could help you spell patronizing if that would be more – if that would be helpful. I am a bit of a smart ass. I would like to think he would look fairly, relatively slim and not a big tub of guts like me. I've always been fairly athletic. However, I played characters that are kind of large and, but yeah, he would definitely have a smart ass vibe because, I've got that gene and I think it's helped me to get work. It certainly has helped me in the context of a lot of the characters that people like. Pinky's a very endearing character, and I think so is Carl. But The Mask, Yakko, Raphael, those were three characters where the sort of, you know, yes, your ass holiness was part and parcel of the success of the character. So for better or for worse, I don't think I'm hurtful, but I've definitely got a kind of a sarcastic, sardonic side that I like to bring out.
When people discover who you are or what you do, where they hear your voice in the grocery store,
yeah.
or like I know you were just at Dragon Con, I guess in Atlanta.
Atlanta, right? Yeah.
Do they want to demonstrate their own vocal skills and their own? You know,
they do. Often they love to say, "Hey, man, I love Pinky. You want to hear my Pinky?" I said, "Sure, I'd love to hear your Pinky," as opposed to see my Pinky, because the company is what part of Hollywood you're in that could take on all sorts of connotations. But yeah, they are. And they're very delightful. It doesn't happen a lot, but people want to, they often say, gee, Brian, what are we going to do tonight? That, you know, that their take on Pinky, they like to hear, many of them love to sing, the Countries of the World song with me. I get that all the time. I've sung that song written by the gloriously gifted Randy Rogel. I don't know, 100 times in public, solo, with music, with symphonies, with a piano, without, a cappella, you name it. So we get a lot of people who say, hey, I know that, you know, and they'll start United States, Canada, Mexico, Panama. Good. That's really great. Or they're very disturbed because I get too Lithuania, and I can't go any further. And I said, you mean literally you get to Lithuania and you can't, you don't have a passport or what do you? But yeah, people do that all the time. And I think that's just, it is a very sweet reflection on the fact that they've found something I've done interesting. And to the extent that they want to try to copy it or mimic it or have fun with it. So I'm very flattered when people do that. And oftentimes they're really good. Some kid emailed me or sent me a thing on Facebook the other day, and he did a great Carl Weezer. So I responded to him. I said, okay, Tim, that's really good. But if I were you, I'd be careful walking to your car, asshole. You know, love to hear their favorite characters. You know, but yeah, the people are just delightful. And I am the incredibly humble, grateful beneficiary of that love, because when people, they really, I don't care if it's on the golf course or in a social situation, when they find out what I do and I do a couple of it just makes them smile. And it really is incredibly flattering that people respond that way.
We're recording this in September 2015, and I'm just curious if you have any other convention appearances going through the end of the
year. I do. Thank you. The 22nd, 23rd, and 24th of this month, I'll be at Salt Lake City Comic Con, which is a big one. They're going to probably have 90,000 there. Beautiful venue in Salt Lake. And then I'll be at New York Comic Con October, I think, 8th through the 11th.
Yes, it is.
Thank you. That's a big one at the Jacob Javits Center. That will be a good one. We're having a huge Ninja Turtle panel. I'll be there. Seth will be there. Sean will not be able to make this one, but it will be Greg Sipes and Seth Green and myself. And as you mentioned, you were kind enough to mention I have a podcast called Talking Tunes, TALKIN'TWONS, which is available on iTunes and my website, Rob Paulsen, that's with an E, PAULSEN, live.com. People can follow me on Twitter, which is at Yakko Pinky, all lowercase, YAKKOPINKY. And I'm on Facebook, and I'm just all over the rock.
Let's take a minute or two and talk about the podcast, and then we'll kind of wrap it up.
Thank you.
What you're at, I think you've done 131 episodes, I think is what I saw.
Right. Yeah. Thank you.
What caused you to start it? Was it, did you have downtime? Were you looking for kind of secondary marketing, keep yourself busy when things were, what was it about?
All of the above. It was kind of slow. I had friends who were doing podcasts. I was being interviewed for podcasts all the time. And I thought, well, I don't think you have to be an MIT grad to do this. And I was trying to sort of embrace my son had gotten me a book on, you know, marketing yourself with new media. And then one day I was, you know, looking at my iPhone, I thought, wow, if anybody would ever be interested in hearing from the best voice actors in the world, arguably, they're all on my phone. They're all friends of mine. So I started doing the initial podcast by myself and just taking questions. And I thought, well, this is going to get really boring for us, for me and the audience. So I'd called up my buddy Maurice, and people flipped when they heard Pinky and the Brain chatting. And then, of course, Mo would do his plethora of other characters. Same thing with Billy West and John DiMaggio and Tress McNeil and Gray Delisle and Candy Milo, just on and on and on and on. And so, yeah, it was an opportunity to come up with something else to continue my passion, to shine some light on these incredibly gifted actors. Johnny DiMaggio took it up about 10 notches because he made a movie called I Know That Voice, in which he was very kind to all of us and really spent a lot of his own do-re-mi making a pretty goddamn good documentary. And I would really ask your listeners to look at it. I think you can get it on Hulu or Netflix, and it's called I Know That Voice. So that, you're right, all of the above. It was a slow period, an opportunity to find a new market. And because I'd had the experience for years now, I've been doing this for a generation, I thought, well, if the people I run into in a normal social situation literally flip out
when I say, hello, nurse,
then that would mean to me that there are probably millions of people who do. So because of nice folks like you who were nice enough to talk to me and people who listen, I get 40, 50,000 listens a month on a podcast that has had this much professional PR because they are hearing from, not me. I mean, I just sit down and turn on the thing and they hear these actors, just Mark Hamill talk for 2 hours and 20 minutes, primarily about being the Joker. And, you know, there is a huge audience of people my son's age who know Mark is, yeah, he's the savior of the universe. He's Luke Skywalker. But to him, or to that group of animation fans, he and Kevin Conroy are the Joker and Batman.
Sure.
I mean, big time. And so when those guys open their mouths, they freak out and go, oh my God, that's the Joker, you know? And so I am, every time we do a podcast, I'm just blown away at how many people really like it. And so I'm trying to continue to take it to a step up a little bit. We're trying to fund a really good pilot to see if we could do it as a live action table for tunes sort of chat show. Because I was kind of inspired by Kevin Smith, who is, you know, a machine. And when he and his buddies do Comic Book Man, I say, God bless you guys. This is great. It's on AMC and people like it. And then I say, well, with all due respect, AMC, if you guys like that, let me bring Tress MacNeille and Billy West and Maurice LaMarche out and just turn them loose for 45 minutes. You'll freak out. And then I'll bring in John DiMaggio and Nolan North and Gray Delisle and turn them loose. And then I'll bring in Tara Strong and Kevin Michael Richardson and Phil LaMarr and turn them loose. It's pretty remarkable. So I'm always looking for new fun stuff to not only be creative, but I think really I feel it kind of a, in some ways, my own little mission to the extent that I can to really shine a light on how talented these people are. And then when you meet them, they're not only uber gifted, but they're the nicest, most down-to-earth people and profoundly grateful for the success they've enjoyed as a result of your listeners.
Well, all right, so my last question, and I'm going to apologize because if I get this really wrong,
that's okay.
I'm embarrassed. But
that's okay.
I'm remembering the first time that I saw Family Guy and I heard Stewie, and I thought it just seemed like there was a pretty straight line from the brain to Stewie. Am I off base there? I don't know why I think that, but
I don't know, but you, Maurice would be the guy to ask about that. I don't know. I know that I don't think he'd be out of, I don't know Seth. I mean, I've met him a few, Seth MacFarlane. I met him a few times. I think he probably knows who I am as a result of, I'm like an old shoe. I've been around, but I don't know. He is so incredibly talented and prolific, but if you're going to be inspired by someone, you can pick a lot worse people than Maurice LaMarche and a character like the Brain. That's a pretty good guy to draw from. I don't know. That's a good question.
When we're done, I'm going to go and I'm going to get a little clip of both because I swear those two characters, they sound very, very similar to me.
It certainly could be, Bob.
But if no one's brought that up before, I must be way off base.
Not to me, but that doesn't mean it hasn't been brought up to Mo. It could have been brought up to Maurice. Now that I think about it, I certainly see why you could make that connection. Why not? Sure.
Well, at least you're being gracious. I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. No, I think you're right.
All right. So, folks, listen. You can hear Rob Paulsen's voice in thousands of cartoons. You can download. You can buy. You know. But you can also subscribe to his podcast, Talkin' Tunes.
You
can do it on iTunes. He didn't mention where I get it on Stitcher.
Oh, right. Stitcher. Thank you.
Very good. Or you can, you know, catch up to it on his website, Rob Paulsen Live. robpaulsenlive.com, which is where you can also find out about are there any Animaniacs live events coming up?
There may be one locally in LA. I'm actually going to find out next week. We just did one at Dragon Con. We've got a couple of orchestras and in Utah and North Carolina. But if you go, it's so much fun. I can't wait for it to sort of, you know, catch on, because so many orchestras will do like an evening of Disney music or the music of Harry Potter. But in our case, what we have is a unique circumstance because you have the people who actually wrote it and performed it being there. And again, I'm not trying to draw a direct parallel, but when I was a kid, if I had an opportunity to go see Carl Stalling music with Mel Blanc performing it, Are you kidding me?
Oh, hell yeah.
So that's what we're offering. And Steven Spielberg and Warner Brothers were kind enough to give us the permission. So if you go to Rob Paulsen Live, you'll be able to see a really beautiful clip of the evening we did with the Colorado Symphony. 80 pieces, big house, couple thousand people. And you never know, there may be folks watching who say, well, I'm associated with the Cleveland Symphony or the Chicago Symphony. Check it out, because it is not only incredibly entertaining, but it's the audience is enormous. It's appeals to people of all ages. Even if you're a subscriber to the, you know, the San Francisco Symphony, and you just go because you buy your season tickets. Last week you saw Yo-Yo Ma. The week before you saw Mahler. Tomorrow you're going to see Itzhak Perlman. But tonight, hey, there's this thing called Animaniacs Live. I promise you will be entertained, because Randy's music is so, so good and timeless. It's really fun. So if you go to my website, you'll be able to get see that nice little clip of us at the Colorado Symphony, and subsequent gigs will be up there, as they will be tweeted out as well.
I actually thought it was kind of like Animaniacs Live was kind of for kids what Prairie Home Companion is for adults.
Thank you. That's a great analogy. What's cool about it is that it is when you hear the stories about the songs that you know, and then Randy, because he was a staff writer, songwriter on Animaniacs, what blows the audience's minds, Bob, are the songs that went to the producers and they said, yeah, that's okay, but yeah, I want something funnier. Give me something else, and I need it tomorrow. And that's when you just literally, and myself included, you just take your breath and go, oh my God, this guy wrote this. You hear what he wrote. It's phenomenal. The producer said, eh, not exactly what we want. And then you hear what ended up on the screen, but there are two or three iterations that are all good. And all of that is part and parcel of the evening. It's really fun. We can do it with a piano and Randy and me for an hour, or we can do it with an orchestra and Randy and Jess and Tress, Yakko, Wakko, and Dot and me for 2 hours with an intermission. It's really a flexible show and not only a lot of fun, but you know, we had 600 people with a sellout show in Atlanta, and they turned away a couple hundred, and we had a couple of standing ovations in 50 minutes, and it's directly a result of Randy's music. Profoundly entertaining.
Very cool. Very cool.
All right, so robpaulsenlive.com. You can also find Rob on Twitter and Facebook, and subscribe to that podcast. And Rob Paulsen, we've had you on here a long time. I feel like you know we've spent a full day together in some.
My pleasure, buddy, and thank you again for being so kind and flexible. And I'm so glad we got to do this the right way. Finally.
Same here, and thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Not at all, pal. People your age and your son's age and even younger can sort of go, oh my God, he's a Ninja Turtle, he's Danny Phantom, Pinky, Yakko. And so I find that there's this really lovely cross-generational appeal to the work that I've done, because everybody loves cartoons and I am no different. I was the same way growing up. So thank you very much for spreading the word to your child. I appreciate that.